It's 12 o'clock noon on Wednesday, December 3rd, here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. The reading of the Arizona Daily Star, Mark DeGroft with you. Amazon Web Services has pulled out of its long-planned role as the future operator of the Project Blue Data Center complex, located on Tucson's far southeast side, three sources have told the Arizona Star. Amazon has left the embattled project because its operations aren't compatible with the project's recently announced plans to use cooling instead of water cooling in the data center servers, according to the sources. Instead, the Project Blue developer, Beal Infrastructure, is negotiating with Meta, the company that operates Facebook, to replace Amazon as the city center's operator, they said. Amazon is out because they can't live with air cooling, one source told the Star. Project Blue switched to plans for an air-cooled operation after the Tucson City Council voted unanimously in August to kill its effort to be annexed into the city and to receive water supplies for its operations. Project Blue officials had pledged to build a $100 million pipeline to deliver reclaimed water to the data centers, but outside critics said that the city would be unable to effectively enforce those and other water-related requirements for the project, including a commitment by the company to be water positive or use no more water than it can replace with other, said outside sources. Meta, on its website, has said that its data centers operating in the United States have electricity use that is matched with 100% clean and renewable energy by adding new projects to the grid, which also helps decarbonize the electricity system. That puts Meta in line with the written commitment expressed by Beal to use 100% renewable energy resources to power Project Blue. The project would be located on 290 acres of land that lies near the Pima County Fairgrounds. The reports of Amazon's departure from the project come as Pima County officials are negotiating with Beal officials over details of how the project would be operated. County officials have pushed to get Beal to put in a written, legally enforceable agreement that its publicly made commitments to use 100% renewables and to not use any potable water except for routine drinking purposes and other office-related uses. So far, no agreement has been reached to put those commitments into writing, along with requests from county supervisors that Beal commit to using unionized workers. All three sources declined to go on the record in order to preserve their ability to get information about the project from other confidential sources, they told the Star. Beal officials didn't immediately respond to requests from the Star to confirm the sources' reports about Amazon leaving the project or that they're negotiating with Meta to replace Amazon. Beal, in fact, has never publicly admitted to any plans to use Amazon as operator for Project Blue's data centers, which could number up to 10 individual centers. However, two county memos from 2023 named Amazon Web Services as the future Project Blue operator, and in one of them, county officials pledged to keep Amazon's identity secret for up to 5 years. Nearly 44% of the 16,000 truck driving programs listed nationwide by the government may be forced to close if they lose their students after a review by the Federal Transportation Department found that they may not be complying with minimum requirements. The Transportation Department said on Monday that it plans to revoke the certification of nearly 3,000 schools unless they can comply with training requirements in the next 30 days. The targeted schools must notify students that their certification is in jeopardy, and another 4,500 schools are being warned they may face similar action. Schools that lose certification will no longer be able to issue the certificate showing a driver completed training that's required to get a license, so students are likely to abandon those schools. It's not clear how many of the schools have been actively teaching students. Separately, the Department of Homeland Security is auditing trucking firms in California that are owned by immigrants to verify the status of their drivers and whether they are qualified to hold a commercial driver's license. This crackdown on trucking schools and companies is the latest step in the government's effort to ensure that truck drivers are qualified and eligible to hold a commercial license. This began after a truck driver that Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy says was not authorized to be in the United States made an illegal U-turn and caused a crash in Florida that killed three people. The action reins in illegal and reckless practices that let poorly trained drivers get behind the wheel of semi-trucks and school buses, Duffy said. He has threatened to pull federal funding from California and Pennsylvania over the issue, and he proposed significant new restrictions on which immigrants can get a commercial driver's license, but a court put those new rules on hold. On Monday, he threatened to withhold $30.4 million from Minnesota if that state doesn't address shortcomings in its commercial driver's license program and revoke any licenses that never should have been issued because they were invalid or beyond a driver's work permit or because the state never verified a driver's immigration status. And so far, every state Duffy has threatened has been a Democratic state. But he has said the department is auditing a number of other states, including Texas and South Dakota. From Washington, the White House said on Monday that a Navy admiral acted within its authority and the law when he ordered a second follow-up strike on an alleged drug boat in the Caribbean Sea in a September U.S. military operation that has come under bipartisan scrutiny. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt offered the justification for the September 2nd strike as lawmakers announced that there will be a congressional review of the U.S. military strikes against vessels suspected of smuggling drugs in the Caribbean Ocean. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt offered the justification for the September 2nd strike as lawmakers announced that there will be a congressional review of the U.S. military strikes against vessels suspected of smuggling drugs in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific Ocean. The lawmakers cited a published report that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth issued a verbal order for a second strike that killed survivors on the boat. Navy Vice Admiral Frank Mitch Bailey, who Leavitt said ordered the second strike, is expected to provide a classified briefing on Thursday to lawmakers overseeing the military. Leavitt, in her comments to reporters, did not dispute a Washington Post report that there were survivors after the initial strike. Her explanation came after Donald Trump, a day earlier, said he wouldn't have wanted that, not a second strike, when asked about the incident. Secretary Hegseth authorized Admiral Bradley to conduct these kinetic strikes, said Leavitt. Admiral Bradley worked well within his authority and the law, directing the engagement to ensure the boat was destroyed and the threat to the United States of America was eliminated. Late on Monday, Hegseth posted, "Admiral Mitch Bailey is an American hero, a true professional, and has my 100% support. I stand by him and combat decisions he has made on the September 2nd mission and all others since." A month after the strike, Bradley was promoted from commander of Joint Special Operations Command to commander of U.S. Special Operations Command. Concern over the Trump administration's military strikes against the alleged drug smuggling boats has been building in Congress, but details of this follow-on strike have stunned many lawmakers from both parties and generated stark questions about the legality of the attacks and the overall strategy in the region, and particularly toward Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The lawmakers said they didn't know whether last week's Post report was true. Some Republicans were skeptical. Still, they said the report reported attacking of survivors of an initial military strike posed some serious problems and merited some further scrutiny. The White House weighed in after Trump on Sunday vigorously defended Hegseth. "Pete said he did not order the death of those two men," Trump said, "and I believe him." Leavitt and Hegseth have spoken with members of Congress who may have expressed some concerns about the reports over the weekend. General Dan Kane, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also spoke over the weekend with the two Republican and two Democratic lawmakers leading the Senate and House Armed Services Committees. He reiterated his trust and confidence in the experienced commanders at every echelon, Kane's office said in a statement. Statement added that the call focused on addressing the intent and legality of missions to disrupt illicit trafficking networks who threaten the security and the stability of the Western Hemisphere. Senate Majority Leader John Thune on Monday broadly defended the operations, echoing the Trump administration's position that they're necessary to stem the flow of illegal narcotics into the United States. Thune said that committees and Congress will look into what happened. I don't think you want to draw any conclusions or deductions until you have all the facts, he said, of the September 2nd strike. We'll see where those lead. After the Post report, Hegseth said on Friday that the fake news is delivering more fabricated, inflammatory, and derogatory reporting to discredit our incredible warriors fighting to protect the homeland. Our current operations in the Caribbean are lawful under both U.S. and international law, with all actions in compliance with the law of armed conflict and approved by the best military and civilian lawyers up and down the chain of command, Hegseth wrote. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer called Hegseth a national embarrassment over his response to critics. Schumer demanded that Hegseth release the video of the strike and testify under oath about what happened. Republican Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, pledged that his panel's investigation will be done by the numbers. We'll find out the ground truth, he said, adding that the ramifications of the report were serious charges. From Washington, since last week's shooting of two National Guard members in the nation's capital by a suspect who is an Afghan national, Trump's administration announced a flurry of policies aimed at making it harder for some foreigners to enter or stay in the country. The administration said it was pausing asylum decisions, re-examining green card applications for people from countries of concern, and halting visas for Afghans who assisted the United States war effort. Days before the shooting, a memo obtained by the Associated Press said that the administration would review the cases of all refugees who entered the U.S. during the Biden administration. The stepped-up effort to restrict immigration has been harshly criticized by refugee advocates and for those who work with Afghans, saying it amounts to a collective punishment. Critics are also saying that it is a waste of government resources to reopen cases that have already been processed. Trump's administration says the new policies are necessary to ensure that those entering the country or that are already here don't pose a threat to our security. Here's a look at some major changes announced over roughly a week. The Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Joseph Edlow, said on the social platform X last week that asylum decisions will be paused until we can ensure that every alien is vetted and screened to the maximum degree possible. Besides the post, no formal guidance has been put forward, so details remain scarce about the planned pause. People seeking asylum must show to U.S. officials a threat of persecution if they were sent back to their home country, whether because of race, nationality, or on other grounds. If they're granted asylum, they'll be allowed to stay in the U.S. and eventually apply for a green card and then citizenship. The Afghan suspect in the National Guard shooting was granted asylum earlier this year, according to advocate group Afghan Evac. The right to apply for asylum was already restricted by Trump's administration. In January, Trump issued an executive order essentially halting asylum for people who have come into the country through the southern border. Those cases generally go through immigration courts, which are overseen by the Justice Department. USCIS oversees the asylum process for foreigners that the government isn't trying to remove via immigration courts. And while Trump's January order didn't affect those cases, Edlow's social media posts suggest that they will now come under additional scrutiny. Edlow said he didn't say how long that the agency's pause on asylum decisions would last or what happens to people while those decisions are paused. It's quarter after 12. Tucson Regional News from Phoenix. Governor Katie Hobbs is defending her proposal to cut personal income taxes by more than $200 million, even as the state faces an uncertain financial future. The state is facing a challenging budget, the governor said on Monday, due not to just an uncertain economy, but cutbacks in federally funded programs. Ben Henderson, her budget director, said that the state faces a looming cliff in federal funding unlike anything in recent history. But Hobbs said she remains determined to cut taxes, even if it reduces state revenues, saying that Arizonans also need financial relief. I hear over and over again that things are unaffordable and this is making it easier on them, Hobbs continued. And I think we owe it to them to deliver that. But she provided no immediate answers on what services, now being provided with state tax dollars, she would cut to make up the difference. You'll see that when we unveil our budget in January, she said, but this is something that we have calculated into the budget that we will present. Hobbs acknowledged she does have one program in her financial sights, curbing the system of universal vouchers that provides taxpayer dollars, an average of $7,400 a year per student, to attend private and parochial schools. The Democratic governor has attempted every year since taking office in 2023 to cut back the program. When outright repeal failed, she tried last year to impose income limits, eliminating vouchers for families who earn more than $200,000, something she claimed would save $150 million a year. That didn't even get a vote in the Republican-controlled legislature. It doesn't mean that we give up the fight, Hobbs said. She contends that news reports about the program, ranging from questionable purchases made by parents of homeschooled children to the fact that there are no income limits, will bring the public around. Nobody intended for our education dollars to be spent this way, she said, as the cost of vouchers, known as empowerment scholarship accounts, now approaches $1 billion. But House Speaker Steve Montenegro said any such plan remains a non-starter. House Republicans remain focused on strengthening the program and protecting parents' rights to guide their children's education, the Goodyear Republican said. Parental choice will not be reduced on our watch. There's Republican support for what the government's program, which is a partial carbon copy of what Congress approved earlier this year, a larger standard deduction for those who don't itemize, an additional $6,000 reduction in taxable income for Arizonans 65 and older, and no tax on tips or overtime. But GOP lawmakers also want things in Congress' Big Beautiful Bill incorporated into the Arizona tax code that Hobbs has not included. These include allowing businesses to write off most of the costs of new equipment faster to reduce their taxable income, and a big tax break for the most wealthy Arizonans who do itemize their taxes. All that carries an estimated $337 million price tag, according to legislative budget analysts. And the part Hobbs wants to cut would state revenues would be about $215 million. Montenegro said Hobbs is wrong to pick and choose which parts of the federal law and the state should incorporate into the Arizona tax code. Hobbs' insistence to tax items in the federal government leaves untaxed would raise everyday costs and drive employees elsewhere, he said. Instead, Montenegro said, the legislature will send her a responsible conformity bill that gives taxpayers the certainty and relief that they need. And whatever happens, it needs to happen pretty soon. GOP lawmakers have asked the governor to convene a special legislative session for January 19th to run concurrent to the regular session that starts on the same day. The State Department of Revenue needs to prepare the forms that Arizonans use to compute their taxes and then get them filed by the April 15th deadline. Hobbs already has directed the agency to incorporate changes, at least those that she wants, into those forms. But Arizonans seeking to get a jump on tax filing who use those forms before the legislature has approved the new provisions will do so at their own risk. If the final deal negotiated between the governor and lawmakers doesn't match, then they'll have to file amended returns. And there's also the fact that most legislation does not take effect until 90 days after the end of the session. Absent a two-thirds vote of the House and Senate, legislation approved in a regular session wouldn't take effect until the summer or the fall, far too late to help tax filers. But if the changes are approved in a special session, the 90-day clock starts running once that special session is adjourned, something that could occur before the end of January. That means the changes would be in effect by the April 15th deadline, and the Department of Revenue could finalize tax forms even before that date. Hobbs said a special session is on the table in her talks with legislative leaders. We need to get this done quickly before people start to file, she said. On a heavily patrolled stretch of Interstate 10 south of Phoenix, people pulled over for having a cracked windshield or an object dangling from their rearview mirror have ended up in deportation proceedings. The stated goal of the traffic stops is to prevent human trafficking through Pinal County, a mainly rural area between Phoenix and Tucson, according to Pinal County Sheriff Ross Teeple. The sheriff said he mainly was concerned with child trafficking, a crime he called horrific. But none of the federal cases filed since January, stemming from stops by Pinal County Sheriff's Office, have involved child trafficking. And in most stops, Pinal County deputies are finding people whose only infraction outside of a traffic violation was being in the country illegally. The sheriff's office wouldn't say how often the patrols take place or when they do occur, with officials saying they don't want to reveal operations. They did give details on how the operations work. A sheriff's deputy parked along I-10